This is Matthew Curtis, and you're listening to the Good Beer Hunting Podcast. You may have already heard of Wildcard Brewery's Jager Wise, especially over the past few months, as she's positioned herself as a prominent anti-sexism campaigner within the British beer industry. I hope to highlight the great work Wise is doing within this field in this episode, but was also keen to learn more about her history as a brewer and her business's plans for future expansion. The danger with conversations like sexism in beer, as Wise and I discuss, is that too often the din of conversation can drown out voices like hers, which are far more relevant and important to these vital conversations that we're having. While it's crucial that every effort is taken to create a platform for these voices, it's equally important to know when it's time to pipe down and let these voices be heard. And to all the dudes listening in right now, I'm talking about you and me. Wise originally hails from Nottingham in the British Midlands, the land of the pale ale, as she puts it. She speaks passionately about the region's pub culture and how it raised her into the world of beer. It's an industry she kind of just fell into after studying chemical engineering at Loughborough University. Wise is also a musician, currently fronting a London-based rock band as a singer, and she's a TV host, providing her wealth of beer knowledge on Channel 5's The Wine Show. Despite all of this attention, Wise appears to be at her happiest and most content when she's working at her brewery, based in Walthamstow, northeast London. When she's not brewing, you can usually find her in the tap room, which, along with neighbouring businesses like Pillars Brewery and God's Own Junkyard, has become an important hub for the local community. That sense of community has been key to this brewery's growth too, as it raised £300,000 last year, aiding its expansion to a new site this spring. Wildcard's 5 short years of existence has not been without its obstacles, however. Wise is quick to point out the challenging margins available for cask beer within the current UK market. And she concedes that despite trying not to succumb to trends, the pull of those such as New England IPA have been too great to resist. This is Jager Wise of Wildcard Brewery. Listen in. Cheers.
Yeah, cheers, mate. Cheers.
Thanks for inviting me down. Thanks for letting me come down and interview you.
No problem.
I know on a Friday people just want to sort of switch off and forget about making beer and just get on with drinking it.
It tends to be our clean day on a Friday. It's when we're cleaning stuff.
Yeah.
So to actually have us brewing on a Friday is quite unusual. But beer's got to be made.
Yeah. Is that just you guys just trying to keep up with demand?
Yes. We've had to squeeze in a final brew this week in order to meet orders and stuff next week. So we just get to
That's excellent. Yeah. Good. Excellent. And what are we drinking right now?
So we are drinking our 4.5% blonde, our King of Hearts. So this is on cask, which we don't do very often, and you can probably...
Why don't you do it very often? It's delicious.
Yeah, cheers. Thank you. We don't have a van, is the main thing.
Okay.
So for us to deliver cask beer is quite tricky. So we do it with distributors.
Yeah.
Especially in places where we know they can really keep cask beer.
Yeah.
It's been an issue with us delivering in London before when we first started. Like, we deliver on a Thursday and then it'd be on tap on a Friday.
Yeah.
And that's obviously an issue. Like, why is it cloudy? You're like, well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So so we do some, but when we can fit it in around kind of other stuff. So it's not really our core business. I know there's been quite a lot of discussion lately about... cask beer, and I think it's all correct. Like, the margins on cask beer are very, very difficult.
Yes, I was just hearing about Affinity, Ben and Steve there. They're doing this cask festival where they are charging £5 a ticket, and they're paying every brewer £100 for each cask, and they're charging £5 a pint.
£100 a cask?
Apparently so.
Where's this festival?
Yeah, have to get in touch with the Affinity guys. But they're trying to do something that changes perceptions. You know, it's very admirable. I think it's a huge challenge. But there definitely does need to be... I mean, we had John Keeling on the podcast recently from Fuller's, and he was saying about the need... There needs to be a good price point for the consumer, but there also needs to be something for the breweries. I mean, not every brewery is at the scale of Fuller's and able to produce that much beer. And, you know, when economies of scale come into play and you... Yeah. you know, it's going to hit your margins.
It's really tricky for us on, like, per brew, we can only make maximum 23 casks. So it's just nothing. It's nothing. It's really difficult, and we actively have to choose, where do I put that volume? Do I put it into keg? Do I put it into bottle, or do I put it into cask?
So that's like 10 full days, what, 10 days from brew to point of dispense, would you say?
Yeah, so
for 23 casks?
If it's in a cask, it's in our tanks a little bit shorter. So there is that cost saving there.
Yeah.
So it'll be like a week rather than 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But it's tricky because in a brewery like ours, you are actively competing for time on tank.
Yeah.
And you have to think, what packaging am I going to get the most out of?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, in November, I think it was November, it feels like a lot longer ago.
It's like a lifetime ago.
Yeah, you gave this incredible speech at the Brewers Congress about sexism in beer and the need to fight that. And your summarising point was the need that change will happen in a generation, but we haven't got that long. We've got to force change. And that really resonated with people. It certainly elevated your status. You became this... You already were a huge voice for advocating change in the industry, but it seems like you became, you know, you joined Melissa Cole as one of the key speakers for this change. So how have things changed for you since then? Is it just back to business as normal, or do you find yourself constantly getting drawn into this debate as a result of what happened last year?
For me, it's pretty much back to business as usual in terms of we make beer every day. So it's pretty much back to business. I get contacted about it a lot, and I'm super, super happy to talk about it and to see the interest and to retweet articles that people are doing. I think it's really important that it's still in the conversation. Like, it's not over. We've not cured anything.
No.
We very barely changed anything. Right. It's important that it keeps going. And me personally, I'm going to do whatever I can personally to keep it on the agenda and to make sure that it's not just noise, that it ends up being some actual legislation or some actual meaningful change.
Yes, indeed. And something you said in an email to me recently that ran true was you had a sort of worry that with the noise, as you call it, that could lead to watering down the stronger points in the argument. Is this something you're aware of trying to cut down?
Yeah, I mean, I'm making the same points over and, and over and over again and on purpose. So for me personally, if those things are achieved, and a few of them have been achieved so far, which is really good, but saying they're achieved and implementing stuff are two completely different things. So I look forward to implementation.
Yes, we all do, definitely. I'm going to come back to that topic later on in the interview, but I feel that every time I've spoken to you recently, it has been about that topic. Mm. And as I said when I got here, I can't remember the last time I read someone asking about the brewery and the beer you're making. So let's start with that, and let's start right at the beginning. Like, how did you get into beer? Because I read that you're an engineer by education.
Yeah.
So how did that, training to be an engineer lead to brewing?
So I'm from the Midlands. I'm from Nottingham in the Midlands, which is
excellent. I'm from Lincoln, so I know Nottingham well. Yeah.
So which is kind of it's the land of the pale ale up there. So going to the pub is just what you do. Mm-hmm. So I was at uni in Loughborough, only down the road from Nottingham, and I was going to all sorts of beer festivals, home brewing, being involved in beer from a consumer perspective, and also doing a little bit of home brewing as well. Mm. And at the same time, I was doing a chemical engineering degree, and the two of them didn't really meet until years later. So in 2012, when I moved down to London and I was working in chemical trading, I absolutely hated my job. So I quit it with no plan. I got a job in a pub down the road, a pub called Checkers, and a couple of mates of mine who I used to hang around with in Loughborough were starting the brewery. And I was like, okay, I'll help out. And then I'm still here.
Brilliant. So. So it was just, you just had this passion for beer.
Yeah.
But have you found your training in engineering gave you an advantage when it came to setting up a brewery?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, having the technical training just simply means that at first I just wasn't fazed by the challenge.
Yeah.
Which is quite a nice position to be in, like stuff like a heat exchanger.
Yeah.
The first time you see a heat exchanger, I'm like, oh, great. I know how that works. Or a pump, I know how to take that apart. So it's quite nice from that perspective. It just gives you a really good foundation. That's, but there's also a lot to learn from practically and from other brewers as well.
That's funny you mentioned heat exchanger, because I was brewing with a friend recently on his five-year-old brewery, and I always look at heat exchangers and like marvel at how they work. Like that's, I mean, it's like jet engines. I sit in a plane, it's like, I don't know how this, I'm not from a scientific or engineering background, so I'm like, I don't know how this works, but it's amazing that it does. And did I hear you also have a musical background?
Yes. I'm in a band. It's called Hell and Hope. Okay. We have our first gig in April in central London, if anyone's interested in coming along.
Excellent.
But so it is we're calling it post-rock electric trip hop.
That sounds like something I'd be into. So, that sounds good. And what do you play?
So I sing. Yeah. So I sing. So I love it. I've always loved it. Every time I don't do music for a little while, I get a musical itch that needs to be needs to be fulfilled. So
I moved to London to be in a band.
Oh really? What do you play?
Day, I play the guitar.
Ah. And
I know a lot of my. I studied sound engineering, so a different type of engineering.
Oh.
Rather than routing pipes, routing sound through channels and things like that. So there are parallels. But I always see this parallel between the creativity side of songwriting and music and brewing. Do you think there's any parallels between the two of them? Because I'm talking about balancing the creative side of brewing and then the science side of brewing.
Yeah, there is some similarities. So there's a song I've written called, I wrote it a few years ago, called The Call.
Mm-hmm.
I kid you not, it took me 2 years to write this song.
Mm-hmm.
And some songs you can write in, literally, you'll get the buzz of inspiration and you'll write it in 15 minutes. And some will take you 2 years to perfect.
Yeah.
I feel like beer's the same.
Yep.
So like sometimes you're like, Eureka, I've got this great idea, and you do it and it's amazing. And then other times you just have to sit on it and just think about it a little bit more, practice brew it six times or what have you. So I think it's pretty similar in that way.
Sounds like beer writing, to be honest. It's like meet the brewer events, like gigs. Do you ever find that when you're addressing a crowd at an event for your beer, is that not the same as singing and promoting your band?
You know what?
I've been thinking about these questions on the way here. I think I might be overthinking it.
You know what? When I quit my job, I was, as well as working in the bar, I was also session singing.
Yeah.
So you get very used to people saying horrible things about you whilst you're in the room, if that makes sense.
Sounds like Twitter.
So you develop, not develop, but it's quite a thick skin you have to have.
Yeah, yeah.
Like everyone's talking about it and everyone's saying stuff. So you just kind of have to be like, well, I'm just doing me.
Yeah.
Whatevs.
Brilliant. So you started Wildcard in the Checkers in 2012?
So I was working in the Checkers.
Okay.
So this was in a pub called the Warrant Officer in
Higham
Hill.
Different pub. And then, so that was 2012?
That was 2012, yeah.
And then you set up here in 2013?
Yeah, late 2013, we got this site. Our original plan was to put a nano brewery in the pub, but it became pretty evident pretty quickly that we were selling too much beer in order to be able to cope with like a one or two barrel. So we started looking elsewhere, and then we got this place. So we started off as cookie brewers, so we didn't come from any money or anything. So we were brewing in other breweries' equipment. And then we approached the Brightside Trust, who gave us or lent us enough money in order to get this place.
Yeah, fantastic. And have you expanded much in here?
So yes, in here. And you can, if you look in the brewery, you can see the different grades of tank.
Yeah.
So you can see the first tanks we got, the first fermenters, and then the second ones. And then at the end, we've got these nice shiny conicals.
Yeah.
And at our new site, we've got another six of the shiny conicals. So it's a big, big step up for us. So it's an extra 12,000 litres a week capacity, potentially.
So new brew house?
Brew house is actually going to stay the same for the time being. It gives us It makes us able to make things like more lager.
Yeah.
So this year has been mental for us in terms of the amount of lager we've been selling, but we're very limited on how much we can produce.
Yeah, that's actually quite, considering like you haven't got a lot of tank space to say that, you know, lager's going crazy for you.
Yeah, exactly.
That must take up a lot of time and space.
It's a lot of scheduling, and it's a lot of, oh, let's get this out the tank, and then let's put something else in the tank on the same day. So it's a beautiful dance.
Yeah.
<I'd say. laughs>
Yeah. Fantastic. So you're moving this, how far, we're in Walthamstow in northeast London now. How far down the road is the new place?
In Walthamstow in northeast London.
So great.
We're still in Walthamstow. We're just on the other side of Walthamstow. So where Beavertown and Pressure Drop are, we're the other side of the reservoir.
Okay. So
that's the new site. For context.
Yeah. So that'll be sort of walkable tap rooms on Saturdays and things like that.
Yeah,
oh, excellent.
Exactly.
And is this space, is that the end of this space for you guys?
No. So this space is going to become a barrel room. I've been wanting for a really long time in order to do some barrel aging. So we're going to have a wall of barrels on this wall. And we're going to have a really cool event space here.
That's cool. It is a cool space. And this is, like, for those who haven't been here in London, God's Own Junkyard is this crazy kind of neon cafe museum, and the Blitz Factory is this sort of club for hire thing. And there's another brewery literally around the corner called Pillars, who they just make lagers.
Yeah, they do.
They have a really fancy water treatment facility,
so they can
replicate the Czech water. For their lagers, which is really interesting. So it's quite a cool place. So I imagine you'll keep the tap room here for that weekend trade.
Yeah, I think we're gonna move the kit over to the new site. We're gonna give Ravenswood some love.
Yeah.
He needs a lick of paint, and then we're gonna get things cracking for the summer.
Fantastic. And so it's sort of 5 years now for you guys. And since then, we've gone from, I think 5 years ago, maybe sort of 40 or 50 breweries. We've got 109 now. Mm. So what have the greatest challenges for Wildcard been over the last 5 years? And is it getting tougher?
Greatest challenges? For us, personally, it's always been money.
Yeah.
And it's simply been because we're not wealthy people. Like, we've not come from, there's no mystery, like, massive investor. We work quite hard in order to get the money we have. So we've done a lot of funding via things like Twitter.
Yeah.
So, hey, who wants to invest in your local brewery? We could really use a new tank kind of investment, which has worked really well for us. But the big thing in 2017 for us was we crowdfunded.
Yeah.
So we have never done anything like that before. And we were all just blown away by how much the local community kind of got behind the crowdfund. It's mental.
And what platform did you use? Was it Crowdcube?
So we used Crowdcube, and we managed to get £300,000, which is just completely blown away, to be honest, which is helping us to do the new site and hopefully make loads more beer.
Brilliant, and build that community up in the process.
Yeah, exactly.
Build those customers. What will this new brewery allow you to do, bar making more beer? You talked about lager, but what about distribution? Because I see you in London, I see you in North London, but like you say you make 23 casks per one brew length. That's not going to give you a lot of penetration in terms of the wider market. Mm. So now with the new brewery, do you plan on trying to expand in London, or are you going to look to other markets? Because, you know, Manchester, Bristol, Leeds, they're all going crazy.
Yeah.
Newcastle, Edinburgh, it's all happening.
It's one of the things that we've been, this year we simply have not been able to make enough beer. So unfortunately, there is a lot of phone calls we get that we just cannot fulfill volume-wise. So it's going to be amazing for us in order to be able to be like, yes, we can do this. And to be able to focus on the big cities outside of London.
Yeah.
As well as London, there's loads of West London and South London that to explore.
It's really interesting you mentioned West London, because that's always been, it's not, you know, the sort of modern beer revolution has been northeast, southeast, of course, and Bermondsey.
Yeah.
But West is still very much, you know, you've got guys like Weird Beard out there and bars like the Italian Job, which do like Italian craft beer. But it's still very much Fuller's territory and still very much old school.
But then, I mean, it's always been the wild card way has always been to, just because you walk past a restaurant, it doesn't mean that they are not going to want like nice beer. Mm-hmm. So you selling like one of our really good customers is a curry house that we have a lager line in, and it's not a traditional what you'd associate with Mother Kelly's or what have you, like a big beer place. But for us, they're one of our best customers because that they have a tap of lager, which is really great. So I mean, West London, with his restaurants,
fantastic, very much so. GBH is partially underwritten by Guinness, who we're collaborating with for our Coming to America series. Guinness began brewing and never stopped at St. James's Gate in Dublin in 1759 and has been shipping beer to America since 1817. And recently, they celebrated their distribution to the US with their 200th anniversary export stout. And we've just taken on New Belgium as an underwriter as well, who will be helping us focus on the evolving world of wild and sour, as drinkers around the world seek out new beer experiences that increasingly occupy a place in our lives once reserved for wine. How do we talk about these beers, buy and sell them, integrate them into new bar and restaurant concepts? We'll be publishing stories in that vein shortly. And of course, we're also supported by The Fervent Few, a growing community of hundreds of GBH readers, including some professional supporters. From the UK, we have Cloudwater Brewco, Four Pure Brewing Co., Magic Rock Brewing, Honest Brew, Siren Craft Brew, Two Tribes Brewing, Beer Hawk, Northern Monk Brew Co., The Five Points Brewing Company, London Fields Brewery, Boundary Brewing in Belfast, and Island Craft Beers, an exporter. In the US, we have The Midden Bar in Ludington, Michigan, Lord Hobo in Massachusetts, Sound Growler Brewing in Tinley Park, Illinois, 1911 Established Cider and Spirits from New York, and then there's Devil's Peak of Signal Hill Products in Cape Town, South Africa, and they all support us through their monthly pro-tier subscriptions. You can join the Fervent Few by visiting goodbeerhunting.com/Fervent Few.
So, Wildcard have never seemed to me to be a brewery that want to chase trends. You focus on what I see as more traditional styles. You do cask ale, which seems to be a very big part of what you do. And lager, of course, I also see that as a traditional style. But how important is chasing trends like a lot of other breweries are doing? Because did I see you doing a New England IPA?
It's happening.
No one can escape.
it's happening. So, I mean, I've always just made the beers I want to drink.
Yeah.
However, this year and last year, we've been doing more specials. And that's simply because, so we got the two big new tanks. We simply just didn't have space for them before to do anything but the core range. So we got the two big new tanks. So we've had space to do specials in the schedule. So we've been doing all sorts of things. So last year we did kind of a pale ale series type thing. So we did all different kinds of pale ales, experimenting with loads of different hops. And this year, on the tail end of last year, we're trying to come out with a new beer every month. And I had some at the Brewers Club. I think it was you that gave me the beer, actually. It was someone that gave me a NEIPA that was like really, really amazing. And I was like, maybe it's a let's
do you remember which one it was?
No idea.
I do have a tendency to say try this.
Yeah, someone's just like, here you go, have this. have this. So, and I think traveling helps. So I went out to New York, and I went to Three's Brewing in New York, and I had a beer of theirs. Then I was just like, what is this?
Yeah,
and it was and it's just you couldn't see through it. It was ridiculously hoppy. And I absolutely loved it. So why not?
They're pilsners. Someone brought me a six pack of their Vlier pilsner.
Yeah.
And I've still got one of their sours in my cupboard. I haven't drank yet. So.
Yeah.
But it's all New York seeing something very similar to London. I think there's this burst of creativity.
Yeah.
These young breweries.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the NEIPA is not necessarily. Oh, who am I kidding? Yeah, I'm following the trend. Why not?
But I think it's interesting you say that because, you know, there's been a lot of debate about it. People are talking about it all the time because it is, I see it as a bit of a sea change in beer because Generationally, we're instilled in this idea that beer is supposed to be bright. I mean, we're drinking nice, bright cask beer now. And this really just feels like a bit of rebellion, but in a package that is something different. It's not bitter. It doesn't taste like beer, in quotation marks. It doesn't taste like malt and noble hops or British hop. It tastes like juice, and it has a different mouthfeel. And it's, you know, that you had black IPA a few years ago, which was, turned out, everyone's like, oh yeah, this is a great new thing. Turns out it was a bit of a fad because people don't drink as many dark beers as they do pale ales. But it's interesting that New England IPA is something that everyone's trying to make. You know, Sierra Nevada have got a new beer out called Hazy Little Thing, and nationally distributed. It's not, they don't call it a New England IPA, but that's what it is.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one to brew because you kind of have to brew it a little bit wrong on purpose. You know what I mean? You kind of have to be like, ooh, shall I add these findings? Oh, no, let's not do that. So with ours, so it added oats, wheat, and Pilsner malt, which is our kind of base. Mm-hmm. And we've just done some... I'm calling it quadruply hopped. So hopped in four different places.
Everyone's doing double dry hopping.
It's the same thing, quad hopped.
Yeah.
Double dry hopping. No. We did that as well. So it's using some techniques we don't normally use, but I'm just doing it. I'm doing it once. If you get it, you get it. Wonderful. But then you'll never see it again.
Yeah, so it's just a one-off.
Just one-off, just a one-off.
What if it goes, people go crazy for it and want more? So you just say, well, that's it.
Yeah. On to the next thing.
I'm not sure I believe you.
Mate, you know how expensive it is to make. It's been an absolute joy to make, and I'm really excited for everyone to try it and for you to try it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's funny you mentioned that Pressure Drop to a double IPA. It's not strictly New England IPA, but Pressure Drop down the road, who we just mentioned earlier, their double IPA is called Bad for Business.
Is it?
Just because of the hopping volumes. Yeah. So what hops did you go for with it?
So we've got Citra, Equinox, and Cascade mixing there. So, I'm excited.
I look forward to trying it a bit later on. So, did I see you? You're on TV now as well. You're on the wine show?
Yeah.
How did that come about?
I don't really know. I've been doing bits and bobs of telly for the last... maybe a year and a half or so. It started with kind of science, history and science. I did some stuff for the History Channel. And then I did some stuff for Channel 4. And then I've been approached about beer. So obviously it's what I do all the time. On a wine program. So I'm slowly trying to bring them over to the beer side.
And your first episode was about sake. Sake is brewing.
It's fascinating.
How was that experience to go out to Japan?
It was just absolutely mind-blowing in order to go to Japan and learn about sake. It has so many similarities with beer. Mm-hmm. It is brewed in a really similar way to which a beer is. So it's absolutely fascinating to learn about it. And a mold called koji, which the Japanese use in a lot of different foods, and they use it in order to break down the starches of the rice and what have you into sugar. So just absolutely fascinating.
So what's interesting to me is you are talking about beer to a mainstream audience when you're on Channel 5. It's not like not like what we do on Good Beer Hunting or beer blogging or other beer media, where it's very much aimed at a specialist audience with interest. This is Channel 5. This is evening television. I mean, it's broadcast.
It's technically prime time.
Prime time TV. Yeah. So, you know, you spend a lot of time talking to beer enthusiasts, like conversations like this. But how do you, when you talk about beer on TV, how do you think about it when in terms of talking to a mainstream audience? Do you have to go, right, I have to really make sure I explain this as basic as possible?
You really do have to think about the way you explain it. But it helps that the rest of the crew, they know nothing about beer.
Yeah.
So when they're like, Jager, you've gone too far, like, you need to, you need to rewind. Like So they very much set you straight when you go off into a tangent. It's just really important that it's understandable. And the majority of people in the UK don't know anything about don't know anything about beer or how it's made.
Yeah.
So it's, and I definitely don't think you have to dumb it down. I just think you have to explain things clearly and explain it in a way that's understandable. And people, and things people want to hear about as well. I don't know how much, as interesting as double dry hopping is to me, I find it fascinating. I don't know how much the ordinary person would know about it.
Yeah, they're not gonna, the ordinary person probably wouldn't even pick up a can and go, DDH, what does that mean? Is it nice beer? You know, how do you explain that to people? So what else did you, your first episode was about sake, but what else did you talk about on the show?
So coming soon in a couple of weeks, I go off to Munich with Joe Fattorini, who's the wine presenter on the show. And I do my very best to try and persuade him that, and I think I win, that beer is better in Munich than wine.
Yeah.
Which is, in my opinion, an obvious one. But Munich actually has a really interesting wine history. So you have to watch the show to find out more.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I have been to Munich. I did not drink any wine when I was there. but I did drink a lot of Augustiner. And a lot of Schneiderweiss.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that sounds exciting. So I look forward to seeing that soon. So, okay, let's come back to that speech at the Brewers Congress. You ended that statement saying the industry needed to force change. So this is a big question. How does the industry force that change? What are your action? What's the plan? What would you like to see happening?
So one of the main things that I would like to see happening, especially now after everything has kind of happened, I'd like to see some actual implementation of some of the ideas that have been put forward. So there's been lots of talk from Camera and Ciba and what have you about banning certain or not allowing certain beers into competition and what have you. So you've got competition season kind of coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about the kind of implementation of those ideas. That I was at the Manchester Beer Festival recently.
You were on a panel, weren't you? About
yes.
the same topic.
Yeah, yes. I was on a panel.
How did that go? I've not watched that yet.
It was fine. I think that the general consensus is, what I certainly took away from it is, like, us in the industry talking to people in the industry about things that people who are interested in about it want to talk about. It's just, it's about more than us. It's about reaching out to maybe the brewers that aren't in the room, reaching out to all those people that didn't come to the conference, trying to find a bridge between us and between everyone else. So it was interesting. So the Manchester debate was the first one where they've actively tried to implement a non-discrimination kind of policy. And I think they did really well. I've never seen so many women at a Camera beer festival in my life. So I was super, super, super stoked. And I got to talk to loads of the brewers about what was going on and what have you. So I would like to see that implemented. I think the crux comes down to nothing says that this is not acceptable than formal written down rules by an authoritative body. And I think the Portman Group in particular have a lot to answer for. And I simply feel that their legislation currently is just not at all fit for purpose.
They don't have anything, do they? They have a review coming up soon, don't they?
They have a review coming up soon, and it'll be interesting to see what happens in that review. But it has taken lots of people from the beer industry practically screaming at them to say, come on, come on, come on, come on, in order to even get a review.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not particularly holding my breath for anything particularly to change drastically, but that's why I think it's so important that everyone keeps on at them.
Yeah.
Like, we want change, we need change, we want change.
Yes, their only rule with sexualized content is if it depicts a successful conquest.
Sexual success
for men specifically.
Yep.
So not it's bizarre.
Which in itself, the term sexual success it's
not great, is it?
It's utterly baffling.
And they have that, and yet they'll make Tiny Rebel move a picture of a teddy bear from the front of a can to a back of a can for being childish, but they don't even have legislation. It's pretty damning, really, isn't it?
It's pretty damning, and you just have to look at the Advertising Standards Agency. So just about how much work they're doing to remove kind of sexual stereotypes from television.
Yes.
And they fall pretty much under a similar umbrella, and it's interesting just how far one group is going comparatively to another.
Yeah.
So
it's interesting. There has been some successes. We've seen Castle Rock Brewery, and they're from your...
Yeah, they're from my neck of the woods. I'm so happy.
And they have a beer called El Simo, yeah. Which, you know, is World War II pin-up art, supposedly.
Mm.
But it's very sexualized, and now it's actually quite an empowering image they have of a woman in a plane.
Yeah.
And I think I read today that Station 119, who are another brewery that you do using that same sort of military iconography, pin-up girls, they're going to change their labels as well.
I saw that yesterday.
Which is progress.
Yeah,
baby steps, maybe.
Yeah, just I think it's a really good thing. I think it's a really great thing.
I agree. So we've spoken a lot. The industry's spoken a lot over the last few months about opening up the industry to women, which is essential. Mm. And the next steps, as I see them, are trying to bring other minorities into that, the LGBTQ community, people of colour. It just gets more and more challenging the further we go. So how do we extend the work that's happening at the moment to encompass more groups?
It's all about, in my opinion, education. It's about going into schools and reaching out towards groups who you wouldn't traditionally put within the craft brewing scene. If you catch people early, then there is potential for them to join the industry. I'm of the opinion that the more different kinds of people you have within within a room, the more likely you are to get a higher standard of talent. And it's what we really need in the industry. It's people from all walks of life. They come with a whole myriad of diverse opinions, diverse attitudes, different techniques for doing things. So the more people we can get, the better beer we'll have.
Indeed. And also the other space I see where probably the hardest task is, but the most work needs doing is in the hospitality spaces. It's in the pubs and the bars and the restaurants, the tap rooms, and they need to become more welcoming. I mean, we look at what Jen Merrick's doing with Earth Station and the statement of intent she is giving in terms of the space in that sort of Royal Docklands area, which is a very diverse area that has resisted gentrification for a long time. And then here comes Jen with a brewery and a tap room. It's like, well, I don't want to be a part of this gentrification. I need to make this welcoming to all the people who've lived here from all walks of life. But how do you think spaces like pubs and bars can then communicate to their staff and then to the customers? What are the next steps, you think, in hospitality?
One of the ways in order to that I think to diversify is to look at the kind of events you put on in your bar or your tap room. And I know I've said this to you before, but for example, at Wildcard, we are showing the World Cup this year.
Yeah, this
summer. Anyway, we're showing it on our 3x2 meter screens if anyone wants to come and see it.
Yeah.
But we've never shown the football before.
Okay.
And that is something that we thought, why the hell have we never done this? And it's not because we are particularly not looking towards football drinkers. It's because none of us personally, we don't particularly have an interest in it. Mm-hmm. So we have kind of ignored it. Which means, think of all the people who would have come to the tap room, all the beer-loving craft beer nutters who were into football.
Yeah.
We've completely, accidentally, we've not meant to, but we've not included them in what we're doing. So I think it's about... Everyone has an unconscious bias. You may not realize you have it. It may not be purposeful. It may not even be particularly that offensive. But it's important that you recognize that there's a potential for that and you try and think outside the box and think outside of the box that you're in. So it's not necessarily what you would like. It's about what Sandra down the road would like or what Pete in the other pub would like.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important you kind of get out of your own box.
definitely. It's really funny you bring up the sport there. I think that's a very pertinent point, because I think I spend a lot of time in America, and you go to great craft beer bars and they have all the sport.
Yeah.
It's, for me, it's distracting almost, because they've got baseball there and the American football there. Yeah. And just for our American listeners, when I say football, I do mean soccer. I'm just using the right word. But I like football, and I get asked by people all the time who visit London, I want to go to a great craft beer pub that's showing Manchester United this weekend.
Yeah.
And I said, well, there's a handful of places. And you have to travel to get there, because the top craft beer bars, the cultures don't, there's no sort of crossing of the Venn diagram. It's interesting you raise that.
But it's interesting when you look at it. I think it's a licensing thing has a lot to do with it. So for you to have the license to show like Sky Sports football,
it costs thousands.
It's really, really expensive. So what tends to happen is big pub co's tend to have those licenses. And in fact, when we first started, it's quite a good indicator to see whether someone is a free house or not. So you can go by and be like, do they have Sky Sports? Chances are they're probably a tied house.
Yeah.
So it's a...
Yeah, I never thought about that. That's a very good indicator indeed. So we've talked about how you want to see change, but how about yourself? How do you balance being this... I see you as this figurehead for change, and I think most people in the brewing industry do now. So how do you balance this forcing change, making the industry more inclusive, with running a brewery that's undergoing an expansion? How do you make sure you're still concentrating on what's happening here at Wildcard?
Yeah. I've started waking up at 5 a.m. honestly, lots of late nights and early mornings is the truth. And also having we've got a really, really great team. A really, really great team. So
how many of you are there?
So in the brew team, there's now five of us in the brew team. So and everyone knows what they're doing. They know their jobs. Everyone knows what's going on. So I schedule far enough in advance. So everyone knows what they're doing. So it's the team effort.
Fantastic. And how do you, through all the tough conversations and those that you've had and those that are yet to come, how do you look after you? How do you preserve your own positive beer experience? And what advice to people would you give who are also fighting sexism? Because we look at someone like Melissa Cole, who's been doing it for nearly 20 years, and it can be very exhausting. And I can imagine it can, you know, on a bad day when you're getting a lot attacked on social media, it can be quite tiring. So how do you bring it all back and go, how do I make sure my beer experience remains positive? And what advice would you give to people who are going through the same battles? Because at the end of the day, we want to keep people excited about beer.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm on this thing right now where I'm trying not to drink the same beer twice. So I'll go to a pub or a bar or a restaurant, and if I've tried it before, I'm not interested. I want to try new stuff. So that is always like super fun. And even here at the tap room, like we sell beer from all sorts of breweries across London and further beyond. So I'm always really excited to try other people's beer. In terms of social media slamming, I was recently in the Daily Mail, so there was 400 comments of abuse. It's pretty much all abuse. But hey, haters are going to hate.
Yeah. especially in the Daily Mail.
Yeah, just as in... I don't even know what to say about half of it. It's when it turns sexual, that's when things get kind of really nasty. But you just kind of have to... Keep on going. Like, I'm a big girl. I can take it.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, there's still some great beer to drink.
Yeah, exactly.
I think I admire you drinking one different beer all the time, because I'm very much in like, I just want to drink the same thing. Yeah. I want to find something good and I want to drink six of it. So that's very admirable. Thanks for coming on the podcast, Jacob.
Thank you for having me, Matt.
Cheers. Thank you. Thanks for listening this week, folks. This week on GBH, we published an article from Brian Alberts calling for a greater focus towards historical preservation within the brewing industry. Meanwhile, our Fervent Few community weighed in on the subject of crowdfunding in light of Northern Monk Brewery's recent drive to raise £1 million, which we reported on last week. Thanks again to our Fervent Few subscribers for their monthly contributions, which make this site tick. It makes things like this podcast and the increasing amount of content GBH is publishing from an ever broader spectrum of writers possible. If you want to join, that link again is goodbeerhunting.com/ferventfew. Thank you. Don't forget that Uppers and Downers London takes place on May the 19th at Mix Garage in Hackney Wick. You can pick up tickets for that now over at our events page. Our music is produced by Andrew Thibodeau and our sound engineer is Jordan Stalling of Particle Audio. Aim true, poor liberal folks. Have a great week.